Welcome to Real Estate Radio Live, an informative and engaging podcast discussing everything you need to know about the world of real estate. Your host, Joe Cacera, provides you with insight and guidance on how to buy, sell, finance, and invest in real estate. He also offers real estate tax management strategies, new construction advice, home improvement tips, and much, much more. And now, to guide you around the world of real estate, here's your host and Real Estate Radio Live team leader, Joe Cacera.
Welcome in, Joe Cacera with Real Estate Radio Live. Thank you for those that are following us on the live feed of Facebook. I think we got our act together here, thanks to the great resources here behind the scenes. Give Grant a big thumbs up over there for fixing the network problems. But again, we appreciate those that are tuning in, watching the live feed. We want to continue to grow the audience as much as we can in any different ways we can, and this is certainly one of them. So thank you again for doing that. This is a podcast, even though we try to, again, get as much social media exposure as we can. So if you haven't done so, if you're watching this on Facebook and you haven't downloaded the podcast, please do so. You could go to iTunes, just type in Real Estate Radio Live, or actually anywhere online, type in Real Estate Radio Live. You can access the podcast or go to our website, reradiolive.com. Most of the focus has almost 8 years now continue to kind of remind everyone, just because we've spent a lot of time. I think, Grant, what is this show, matter of fact, 1600 and something? It's nice to remember every once in a while. It's, I think we're over 1600 and something shows since we started. And just a reminder that a lot of consistency, hard work, great partnerships, great teams like Mike D'Ambrosio here today. We do our show typically every Wednesday if we're not busy doing something else less important than what we do today, like trying to make money.
Like, yeah, helping people buy and sell houses, yeah.
Right. We try to do this on Wednesdays, Two Italian Guys Talking Real Estate, so we'll continue that as well. We have a lot of fun. And at the same time, you hear me say all the time that we want to really work hard every day at providing value to you, consumer. To really break that down, what does that mean? We want to provide you with an education, information, so that you can make wise decisions. And things that we hope that when you listen to or you engage, that you learn from those. Or you hear something you may not have heard, or some help that we could give you one way or another. Or whether it's suggestions and different things that we do, rather than just get on here and act like a bunch of goofballs. So we'll try to do that as
we'll
much
do both,
as we can
yeah.
at the same time. So good to have you back. It's
yeah.
Wednesday.
It's good to be go. Back. Yeah.
We have a fun topic today for us, of course it is, but we also thought we'd give everyone kind of a quick update on the industry from both perspective, real estate and lending. We do this every once in a while, usually more specifically several times a year when major things take place or happenings. To the general consumer, sometimes, you know, it's not a big deal, or you see something in the paper that says yesterday that Compass had acquired Lompinel Real Estate, which had been in the area for a long time. It's a big purchase. And if you've been listening to the show, you know Mike and I have been talking a lot about consolidation, industries changing, not just real estate and lending, quite frankly, everything around us. I mean, we're in the changing environment of the world here, Silicon
yeah.
Valley, right?
Disruption, all that stuff,
yeah.
you know. And
it's here to stay. So what we want to try to do is report on it when we can, give you updates. And so what we're going to do today, Mike and I are going to have a little exchange or discussion about, you know, what's going on in the industry, what do some of these changes mean, does the consolidation, what does it mean for the industry, and
what
specifically
the consumer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, more specifically, mm-hmm. what does it mean for you, the consumer, as you're watching this, listening to this podcast, what does that mean? What does it mean when, you know, the lending industry consolidates? What does it mean when they struggle, when someone goes bankrupt, when someone buys someone else out? What does all this mean to the consumer? You know, not that that's... But these things are going to happen over the next couple of years just because they do. Things change in the industry. So we're going to chat a little bit about that. So maybe we could start just yesterday. I think it was yesterday or the day before. Maybe it was the day before. The announcement about Compass buying Lompinel. Mm-hmm. Lompinel, most of you, if you know, has been in the area for quite some time. 20 years maybe? 20 plus years?
Yeah. I think even maybe almost
maybe
30.
Maybe 30, yeah.
But Lompinel really started. It's kind of funny how this is happening, because the way I understand it is Lompinel was formed even through a similar type of event that happened from a company called Realogy, who owns Coldwell Banker and Century 21, which is a lot bigger in other parts of the country. At the time, they were bigger around here. Mm-hmm. And so Realogy was kind of the big monster in the area that owned a lot of the brokerages. Well, Alain Pinel was formed really to try to start to compete with that.
Right.
So now it's kind of like it's come full circle, and now they're getting gobbled up by someone that's coming into the area with a lot of financial backing, too. So it's kind of interesting how they've come to this point from where they began. So that's what.
Yeah.
But they're known. I'm not here to bash any other real estate companies. I mean, most of you that listen to the podcast know I'm a part of Intero Real Estate, great firm. Alain Pinel's got a lot of great agents. Mm-hmm. They're well known for luxury real estate, and even Alain Pinel is actually a person. He's a man. He's a friend. He's from France,
right?
And he actually worked with Intero for a few years after he retired from Alain Pinel. And he worked with Intero to help us start our luxury division. So he's very good at luxury real estate, and therefore his company, Alain Pinel, which is still carries his name, and I don't know what's going to happen to it now. I assume it's going to become Compass, but his company was well known for luxury real estate too.
And they did an outstanding job building that brand.
Yeah,
they really did.
Absolutely.
You know, they did an outstanding job doing that. So what this typically means is when this happens. Most of you, if you understand this, it happens in all industries, and specifically what does it mean to the consumer, is that usually it's either a strategy for a company to grow, and the way you grow quickly is you buy companies, because organically, sometimes if you're trying to grow quickly, it just doesn't happen that quickly, right?
So that's one reason. Or it does. So with Intero, so I was talking about this at our sales meeting yesterday. It's both sides. Either you have to acquire companies, or you have to grow organically, like Joe said. So, for example, Intero, when they were started, they've been around 16 years. We've been around 16 years. It was, for the first couple of years, the fastest organically growing company in the country. Because, and what we mean by organic is that you grow office by office, agent by agent. You don't acquire other companies. You grow from within, almost like a startup, essentially, is you start to grow organically. But the thing is now, like Intero, they're owned by Berkshire Hathaway.
Right.
We're an affiliate of Berkshire Hathaway, who is buying up a lot of other real estate companies. So that's not an organic growth. That's the other way around, which is kind of what Compass just did with Alain Pinel.
So whatever the reasons, there are a number of different reasons. We don't really want to spend much time on that. More so, let's talk about how, if anything, it affects the consumers. Real estate's a very local industry, local market. For instance, I mean, you typically have a relationship with someone, typically, and sometimes not. If you're a repeat buyer and you've bought real estate before, most of the time you might have a relationship with a real estate agent, and you lean on he or she when you need real estate needs again. If you're a first time, then typically you seek out advice and referrals, or, you know, again, friends, family, coworkers, you know, who you might use. So does this at any way affect the consumer, you think, or is it just someone simply, Mike, changing companies, it's another name, and, you know, if you're working with Mike, it has nothing to do whether Mike's with Intero or Compass or Alain Pinel. Mm-hmm. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
I think it could affect consumers for a couple of different reasons, and we're still trying to figure all this out, but I really think so. Just so people know, Compass is a very well-funded, well-financially backed company, and I believe a lot of their money comes from Saudi Arabia, who backs the financial institution that
international
backs
investors.
Yeah, that backs them. But the big thing about Compass is that, number one, the way I think it could affect consumers is their leadership team is in New York, and they're back east, really, the main leadership team. With other local firms like Intero and even Sereno, and our leadership is here.
Very
it's local.
Right.
They've been here for decades. Our agents are trained that way. So from that perspective, that would be a concern of mine. And again, I'm not here to – I know Compass has got a lot of great marketing, and I'm not here to bash that. But if I'm talking about potential to affect consumers, that's one thing. The other thing is data. And we've talked about this, Joe, is the data grab, and what does that really mean to the consumer?
Right.
And I just feel like for a company that is positioning themselves for an IPO to go public, and they want to, you know, you have to look good to the investors, what's going to happen with the data, the data of your clients and consumers? So that is going to be something that really a consumer should should watch out for.
Right. So what you're saying is if a consumer has worked with a real estate agent in the past, maybe Alain Pinnell, we don't know this is going to happen, but a scenario could be Compass acquires Alain Pinnell,
mm-hmm.
and that information could be sold to other entities or other companies. In other words, it could be sold to other industries, other entities.
Correct.
So what Mike's talking about, which is a really, really big sensitive issue right now with throughout the world, and Facebook kind of brought this to the forefront, and just basically privacy and what people are doing with your private information.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people would say, well, it's not a big deal if you have my name and email. But then some people would say, well, then that goes a little bit further. What else do you have? Do you have my address?
Mm-hmm.
And then if you did a real estate transaction, sometimes you have more personal information. And then I would say, I don't know if there's any, you know, what kind of cross-utilization of data, Mike, but I know a lot of real estate companies are affiliated and have joint ventures with lenders, right?
Yeah.
So lenders, you know, I'm a lender myself. We collect, you talk about personal data, we collect just about everything you can imagine.
Yeah, besides a blood sample, right?
And sometimes that. And sometimes that. So I guess what we're saying is just kind of heads up, be careful, and always, regardless of whether it's this conversation we're having or anything, watch, keep an eye on your personal information, and sometimes you don't know if it's being sold or not. You really don't. I mean, to the consumer's point, be very careful, because whether it's this that's happening now in our industry or anywhere else, this is happening all over the place.
Yeah, because look, here's the thing, is that Compass is financially, I mean, I don't know the exact number of how much they've raised, but I believe it's
over $500 million.
Yeah, at least it's in the, I think it's
more
in the 700 to 800 million range.
Right.
Now, for that amount of money to get pumped into it's essentially what there is a traditional brokerage firm. A traditional brokerage, look, there's no magic bullet in real estate.
No.
I've talked to a lot of our leadership that's been in the industry for decades, three, 4 decades. I've been in the industry a little over a decade. There's no magic bullet left other than data. Mm-hmm. And so why would that much money get pumped into a new firm for the long run if it wasn't something having to do with that, is my guess. Why?
Well, I think data is one of them, but I also think just pure numbers, right? So if over the next 5 or 6 years, if just out of sheer, because they have the capital, they could make 7, 8, 9, 10 huge acquisitions.
Yeah.
That's another, because all of a sudden now you have not only data, but you do have now a big market share.
Yeah.
Whether that sticks or not long term, we don't know. But
yeah.
I think there's two reasons for that. I think data is one, but if you could prove that to your investors that you could have market share, you know, 20-25% of some of the biggest markets in the United States, that's valuable.
I think so. Yeah,
to a certain extent.
The
thing that I worry, I don't personally worry, but what I'm interested in, and I think it's more about data and other things going on, is that, would you agree that, you know, all of our industries, typically as we move forward, there's a better chance that there's going to be more compression and pressure on our pricing?
Yeah, absolutely. There are. That's already happening.
In the opposite direction is my point. There's a better chance you and I could be making less per transaction than more 5 years from now is my point, right?
We
don't know that, but for the most part.
And it's already happened the last 5 years,
right.
And I could see that trend continuing.
So kind of to your point, if you know that and you know that's the model, you probably, as you're growing, you should try to create maybe a model that's more conducive, or maybe an overhead, or, you know, your overhead or your liabilities aren't as much. I don't know. So that'll be interesting to see how that happens. But so I think the message, again, back to you, the consumer, the first point we're making is how it could affect you is, depending on who you're working with, one of the questions actually might be a consumer's interviewing a real estate agent these days is, you know, to ask about their personal information, how it's used, right? That's
mm-hmm.
a good question. I mean, we get it all the time as a lender because, obviously, again, we're asking for tax returns, W-2s, pay stubs, bank statements. You know, we get it all, and so we've been under that scrutiny for many, many years. But in general, people may not think, well, it's not that big a deal because, you know, they don't have anything personal. But believe it or not, your name and your address and email and some other buying habits and things like that, you know, could be valuable to companies.
Yeah, I mean, we have a privacy policy that we make all of our clients sign to tell them, you know, we're going to protect your information, we won't sell your information, so that's really important to us.
So, anything else? Any other reasons, Mike, that could affect? Usually, it's very personal, right? People have personal relationships with real estate agents, typically,
mm-hmm.
and then a merger or a buyout or anything other than possibly data being compromised, potentially, any other ways that it could affect the consumer working with an agent by changing companies?
No, I don't really. I mean, other than the train, like I said before, local market knowledge, okay. local leadership, yeah. how are they being trained? What do they know about the local market and the marketing and all mm-hmm. of that? I think those are the biggest things. But other than that, I mean, what's going to happen is 60 days down the road, this is yeah. not going to be a big deal. Right. I mean, one of my messages to my team the other day is, just put your head down and continue to work and grind. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people in the industry over the next 60 days that are going to be all about the drama and what's going on, and they're going to lose focus of what's actually the end game mm-hmm. for us in this business is actually closing transactions and helping people buy and sell homes, and they're going to be focused on all the other crap that's surrounding this, right?
Right.
So for us, it's like, hey, put your head down and focus. It's just another competitor. We mm-hmm. have them already. They've been there.
Right.
So we just got to keep on what we're doing. So anyways, that's a long answer to your question, but I think the local market knowledge and the data is really the two mm-hmm. big things, but it's just going to be another. It's just a different company coming in. It's not,
yeah.
you know.
Technology's talked about a lot, and actually it's a little nauseating to me sometimes because sometimes companies will talk about technology to yeah. get publicity or news or newsworthiness or get a publication or something. But when you understand really what's going behind the scenes,
you got to use it.
You and I both know this really well. So when someone, a real estate company, Mike, says, you know, we've just invested $20, $30 million in the technology, and they don't really know specific about what it's going to do. I think sometimes just when we say technology, mm-hmm. all of a sudden people go, oh, man, they must be up to date and must be just doing all kinds of great things. Does that necessarily correlate to a better experience for the consumer?
No.
Okay.
I don't believe so. Yeah. I mean, I think it could if the agent is using it.
Okay.
But you and I know that most agents don't take the time to utilize the technology.
Right.
You got, if you're going to tout technology, you got to friggin' use it.
Right.
And,
right.
and deploy it. So we know that most people won't do that. I do think there, maybe I shouldn't say such a hard no. I think there are a lot of tools mm-hmm. and technology for real estate that do help enhance the consumer experience.
Right.
If it's used properly. I mean, I know at our company, and I use Intero, for example, a lot because I work there, so yeah. I know everything we got. We have a lot of great tools that enhances the customer experience, but it only matters if I introduce it to the clients.
Right.
And even at our company, not everyone's using the tools. So
right.
technology is great, but if it's not being utilized, then what the heck do you have
right.
it for?
Well, this will get me back to, I'll revisit real quickly, and you've heard Mike and I talk about this before. And it's again, it's not so much a indictment against both of our industries. It's just a reality. And the reason I bring that up, and Mike just made a point that very few people use the technology in both of our industries. So that, again, is why you always hear us saying about make sure you choose the right person and the right team to work with on a transaction like this. Because someone, you know, most of our industry, remember, 10% or less does 90% approximately of the business.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of a rule of thumb.
And let's face it, when it comes down to it, we're helping people buy and sell houses.
Yeah.
And that is a physical commodity. And that's, I believe firmly, you know, we have all the technology I forget what it's called, the Oculus, the goggles, and mm-hmm. the virtual walkthroughs. And
VR.
But, yeah, VR, which I think is a little bit being used by people. But
yeah.
at the end of the day, I believe it hasn't taken off because people still want that physical
yeah.
walkthrough. They still want the interaction with the professional agent. They still want that person to walk them through the process, and you can definitely use technology to assist you along with it. But at the end of the day, this is a major transaction that people don't make every day. It's not like Uber. It's not like a cab ride. This is this is a major thing. So I think technology is great to an extent, but I believe that this industry is going to have that personal touch for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, I would categorize technology as an enhancement for me. When you have a transaction that's very, very complicated in both on the lending and real estate side, as Mike mentioned, it's great to watch shows about, you know, people putting a pair of glasses on and buying a home in, you know, Hong Kong from San Francisco and all that. I mean, it's kind of fun to do a show like that. But you're not going to find people that are going to do that. They're going to live in that house. Mm-hmm. You might find from time to time people are familiar with areas that might be buying investment property.
Yeah.
By doing, they know enough about it. They've done their research. They have people in that area. That's another thing a lot of people don't want to explain. You know, they have people in the area, boots on the ground, looking at different. So when they look at something, they already kind of know, right? It's not this like guessing game, I'm going to flip a coin.
Yeah.
But if it's a home you're going to live in and you're going to raise your family in or someone else is going to be in it to live and spend time, you know, people are going to want to go there. They're going to walk through it. They're going to want to see it.
Smell it. Right. Touch it. You know, all that. All the senses is a part of this transaction.
Yeah, so it's going to happen. So
what do you think about the lending side of things this year? And we're talking about acquisitions and consolidation. So what do you think on the lending side?
I see a lot of the same. I really do. It's going to go hand in hand. I just saw just before we jumped on the podcast today, one of the biggest servicers is laying off 2,000 mortgage people that handle loans and handle services. And so you're going to see more and more in this, more and more of consolidation in the lending business too. I guarantee you here in the next couple of months. Again, the reason that we don't say this to alarm people or try to be dramatic as much as we spend a lot of time researching and trying to figure out what's going on in the industry so we could pass it on to you in a timely fashion. And so, yeah, there's a lot of the same that's going to be taking place in the lending business. And so much of what I just asked Mike, I think, is the same, Mike, in that, you know, if you trust someone you're working with and if you feel like they're doing a good job for you on a regular basis, just keep an eye on what's happening. And if there's a concern, what I would do, if I'm a consumer listening to this or you're wondering and you just see that a certain company bought another banking company, and the particular loan officer you're working for works for, you know, Bank A and Bank B bought them, I would give them a call. You know, I would say the same thing about a real estate. Give them a call and say, hey, I saw this in the news. What's going on? You know, I'm checking in. I'm getting ready to refinance or buy a home or something. And is this going to affect me? I mean, that's what I would do if I have a relationship with someone. Yeah. And then you could find out real quickly if there's any effect at all. And so I would say the question, is it going to have any effect on the consumer? Again, I think what's going to happen is be careful about, I mean, the competition sometimes, you know, there's less deals, there's less transactions to go around, and that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of consolidation in our business, because the lending business, unlike real estate, certainly we work on the purchase transactions, the buy-sell stuff, but the thing that is totally different is, you know, our industry, the lending banking industry, has done a lot of business the last 10 to 12 years in pure refinance.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, the rates have come ticking down, ticking down. Every time the rates come down a certain percentage, that generates a large millions of volume of refinance business. Well, refinance business in the United States in general has pretty much dried up. And so what refinance business represents now is what I call situational refinance. That would be if someone needs money, they want to consolidate a first and second. Maybe they want to remodel. Maybe there's a divorce. Maybe things like that. That's situational.
Yeah.
But I would guess, and I know for sure, there's less than 0.5% of people that look at their rate today and say, you know what, I think I'll refinance because I get a better rate. Most people have probably already done that.
Yeah,
unless they had credit challenges or something and they're going to try to repair. Again, situational. So that's the big thing that has changed the lending industry that's different is we've lost a segment of business that has really been hanging around for 8 to 10 years. It has. I mean, I could remember several years ago, refinance represented 50, 60, 70% of my business at times. And now it's 90%, 80 to 90% purchase, 10 to 20% refinance.
Yeah.
And I know that that's reflective of most of the market in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's how it's going to change. So I would say that just be careful of the changes. One of the biggest things I would say, similar to what Mike and I talked about on the real estate side, really, really be concerned who you work with in terms of handling and protecting your data and your information. We have a technology where, you know, Mike, people could upload documents securely through a link, and they automatically come into our software system that automatically handles that and starts building the file. But there's a lot of banks, and whether they're big or small, that don't have a lot of these secured systems. They still say, you know, PDF scan fax and a lot of things like that, which is hard to believe.
What's a fax?
I know. Isn't that funny? Well, e-fax, right?
E-fax. Oh, yeah.
Which
e-fax.
Is funny. You still put it through the machine or the copier and it shows up in your email. I would just say the one thing would be careful with that. You know, security is such a big part of our business.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
In general, again, I hate to keep bringing them up, but poor Facebook. I mean, this is a perfect example. People are in an uproar about privacy. And one of the big examples is you don't know what people are doing with your personal information. And so just like Mike said on the real estate side, I would be very careful of that. So if you do a transaction with a bank, this is one of the things I always tell my clients or anybody else. If you're in the middle of a transaction with a bank or someone else, buying a car or whatever, and all of a sudden you automatically have an uptick in marketing calls, emails, stuff all of a sudden you're going, what?
Yeah.
What's going on here all of a sudden? That could be happening. And I'm not saying they're selling it on purpose, but there could be some things going on. I would say that's the thing to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
And that's an indicator if they're protecting your data. And there's, by the way, speaking of that, there's one thing that I don't know how it's legal, but it is. And I've brought this up before, and it kind of goes along with what Mike and I are talking about. You know, there's a triggering system right now when, like, if I pull credit for someone that's going to do a refinance or a pre-approval for a purchase, the credit bureaus actually sell that information, which is unbelievable to me. Now, when I say
the
they sell
bureau.
That information, isn't that great?
Yeah.
The same credit bureaus that we're supposed to trust.
Yeah.
They sell that information to anybody that wants to buy it. Now, just so I'm straight about this. So what they sell is the fact that you, Mr. Smith, they know your name and they know your address. They're not giving your phone number and they're not giving your Social Security number, things like that. But still, nonetheless, what happens is if people aren't in an opt-out or an opt-in situation, they're all of a sudden they're going to get hammered by calls and emails about, we understand you just applied for a loan. And that freaks people out. They go, how did you know about that?
Yeah.
Right? It's a little bit weird, right? I mean, it's
a little bit, yeah.
So those are the things I would say. In our industry, there is going to be consolidation. And if you see something that seems strange, I would call the person you work with. Or maybe if the person you work with is with a bank you don't trust or you don't like, then, you know, interview people to do differently. I know, not to use their name, but, you know, they've earned a reputation, unfortunately. Wells Fargo has, you know, been caught doing some unscrupulous, a lot of different things in the last several years.
Well, I think a lot of people know about all the crazy things that they've been
getting busted
for. So
it makes people wonder,
yeah,
you know, what you're doing with my information.
Absolutely. It
so
should.
I would say, in general, we're sounding the same in terms of what to look for. It's not going to be, if you're working with someone you trust, the service levels are not going to waver. You're still going to have good service when you trust people. And you like them, and you like doing business with them, those things. I would just say be careful of the data, the information, your personal private information, and what they're doing with it. I think that's one of the major things to keep an eye on.
Absolutely.
And technology, you know, for our end, a lot of people see I'll kind of touch on the technology side. A lot of people see Quicken spends hundreds of millions of dollars a year marketing. I think it's Rocket Mortgage is what they market. So the idea and the marketing image is that, you know, a loan could be done within hours or a day or 2 days. The challenging part of that is the reality is that we're still a ways away from that. Can you get approved within minutes? Yeah. I mean, we have systems within our banking system that if we have your authorization to pull your credit, and we could actually get W-2s, I mean, within minutes from employers now and access to that.
Yeah.
So it is true. I mean, you can get a person approved within minutes, technically approved.
Right.
Now, where it becomes a challenge is if you're self-employed, if you have commission income you rely on, if we need to look at tax returns, all these kinds of things all bring into a whole different dimension.
Yeah.
So I would say that when you hear the loans being done in a couple of days, or that could very well happen in a short period of time, but it's probably a very, very simple loan. And it's a conforming loan, which is, you know, less than $450,000 or so. And it's someone that's a W-2 income earner that doesn't rely on any other income. And they have good credit. And it's a straightforward deal. Then those are pretty simple. Those could be automated and run pretty quickly.
Yeah, which I believe is probably more feasible in other parts of the country.
It is, definitely.
What we're seeing, you know,
definitely.
Silicon Valley, basically everything's jumbo loans. You got people working in tech with restricted stock options and have contract employment, you know, employment contracts or not, you know, they're not full time or what, you know, just there's all sorts of different things. Just like Silicon Valley real estate is different than a lot of the rest of the country. I think it obviously goes into the mortgage too.
It is.
So.
So anyway, if you're not nauseated by now with the real estate and lending industry, you will by the end of the show. No, we really try to do is keep you updated from time to time, specifically on industry, what the changes might mean for you, the consumer. The last thing I'll say, and then I'll let Mike chime in too, is what won't ever change typically for me that I could see as I deliver messages to you, the consumer, that I hope you trusted us over the years of being on the air and then on the podcast, is that just be sure you choose the right person or the right team to help you with this transaction. And it is a different transaction. It is different. I mean, you're making an investment. These are mortgage payments. This could affect your credit. This could affect your life. This could affect your family. And I say those things because it is a large transaction that some people take for granted because we do them often. In our industry, sometimes I do. But we have to realize that these are big decisions. There's a reason why people get so stressful when they buy or sell a home. I mean, it's more than a coincidence, Mike. It's because it is a stressful emotional situation.
It absolutely is. And the other thing is, too, is to start the process early. Don't be afraid to start asking questions and assembling your team and getting it all ready to go. And that could be a 6 months before. It could be a year, whatever. Just don't be afraid to start the process early, because the more prepared you are, the better you're going to be.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Anybody want any more information on how to reach you? What's the best way to do that?
Go to my website, mikedsells.com, or 408-630-0101.
And most of you know, you could reach me at RE Radio Live, or you could always contact me 408-838-9060. Thanks again for checking in. Have a great afternoon. Take care.
You've been listening to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's program, visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Discover more at reradiolive.com.